Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey everybody, it's your buddy John. Just a little announcement before we get ripping and rolling here. I uploaded a Patreon. I have a Patreon now. There's bonus content for people who pay a small fee, a bit of coin for a ton of extra content. And there is some wild stuff that I'm throwing up there, some even wilder stuff that I'm going to be throwing up there. And I'm also just throwing up pretty much on a regular basis because of how poor I am. So, if you feel like you might want to support one of your favorite podcasters with a few coins, just a couple shekels, you could say, a month, then you can find it at 21CD Podcast on Patreon. Thank you. Bye-bye. I've often been told that my imagination gets the better of me, that I see patterns and shadows where only dust dances. I can't help it. The sense that the official story of our past is incomplete has been with me since childhood. It's that little itch behind the ear, that soft hum that says, there is something more. They wouldn't have told us all of these stories of heroes and magic and wonder if they weren't somehow true. I've spent countless hours digging through internet archives, squinting at old journals, trying to read this horrible handwriting or piecing together where the pages are ripped. You know, I've trudged through all of these web forums online. I feel like I've seen everything, and then my quest is to peel back the settled narrative and expose the overlooked or dismissed possibilities that might illuminate how we got here, so we can maybe determine where the heck we're going. I want to share a journey of discovery that has seized my mind for years, and it concerns nothing less than flight. Hot air balloons, gliders, or any contraption that you'd never expect to find in the golden age of the Aztecs, the Maya, and the Inca. Modern textbooks insist that flight was impossible back then, reserved for the dreams of Icarus and the gods, essentially. But I've come across some small threads, scattershot clues kind of woven through myth and local lore and bizarre experiments, curious artifacts, stuff like that, that collectively say maybe we were only partially an earthbound species at one point. Maybe flight was more popular back then than we realize. The story I'm about to tell you brims with all sorts of half-lost references and obviously a bunch of myth and legend and lore. So what we're about to talk about is more of a hypothesis, a theory, than something that has been proven or something that can be proven. I'm hoping proof comes out soon, but speculation is what gets us there, in my opinion. Thinking and asking these kinds of questions is what gets us eventually to look for the answers that we might not know we're even looking for if we don't even know the question. Anyway, my story is going to insist that there is a possibility that these incredible civilizations, so often portrayed as brilliant but somehow less advanced than their old world counterparts, may have achieved a dream that modern society only grasped within like the last few centuries. Ancient flight in the Americas was more than a mere fantasy. It literally might have been real. These guys might have been flying all over the place in the Andes Mountains and beyond. I remember the night I first started thinking about this kind of stuff, and I was looking at an old PDF, some out-of-print pamphlet that was referencing the so-called Kimbaya airplanes. Those artifacts from Columbia, I'm sure you guys have heard of them. They were a hit on Ancient Aliens, and I'd heard of them before as well, of course, but that evening, the pictures really jumped off the screen at me. The silhouettes of these small gold figurines, typically dated from about 500 to 800 CE, looked shockingly like modern Delta Wing jets, complete with stabilizers and tail fins. My interest was piqued this time more than other times that such images had wandered into my way upon the road, because recently so-called new evidence is attempting to suggest that these fins resemble fish more than airplanes. So they must be fish, not flying craft. They only need one article like this to be put out so that they can kind of point at something to disacknowledge God's and essentially man's knowledge and their ability and their power. They're called hit pieces, and they have no weight to them whatsoever, but it is something that people can point to and say, see, it's on the internet, so it must be real. But it's not a fish. And if it's not a fish, then mainstream archaeologists will label it something simply as artistic, perhaps stylized birds or insects. But side by side with images of modern aircraft, the similarities are kind of uncanny, and I felt that tingle, like if a kumbaya could shape gold into an aircraft-like form, then what if other cultures, close relatives in the broad tapestry of pre-Columbian societies, had once gone further? What about the Egyptians? Flying models of what appear to be airplanes have been found in Egypt as well. So the Kimbaya alone don't prove that the Aztecs or the Maya or the Inca flew, of course, but they did plant a seed that something bigger might be at play. And among the first controversies that drew my attention to the flight hypothesis was a frequently cited fact, and that's that the Aztecs, the Maya, and the Inca, they didn't really use the wheel for transportation. Guys, this blows my mind. Because they understood that things roll. They understood the concept. They are Mesoamerican. They have Mesoamerican toys with wheels. Yet large-scale wheeled carts never really seem to become part of their society. And traditional explanations say stuff like, well, there weren't any suitable draft animals to pull their carts, or the landscapes were too mountainous or swampy for such things to even be practical. Okay, well, if we were in a competition for the argument that could hold the most water, you would lose that competition, because have you ever heard of a wheelbarrow or a hand cart or even a skateboard? What if that's only part of the story? Like, could they have traversed certain distances by other means, like flight? And I know it sounds far-fetched, but if we consider that the Maya building their cities in dense jungles, or the Inca spreading their empire over highlands that are very perilous, maybe the impetus for heavy wheeled transport just wasn't there. Or maybe gliding or ballooning was attempted by only specialized elites, or, you know, like not everybody got to do it. Scouts, priests, messengers, while the rest of the populace just managed on foot. You can imagine how, if flight was ever real, it would remain a closely guarded secret among the ruling or priestly classes. It's not going to be something that they all just do like an avatar or something like that. This technology, this ability, would be easily lost or suppressed under something like a colonial domination, which is what ended up happening to these people. It's also true that only certain people were even allowed to create pictographs and paintings displaying the story of their people. This was not a thing that everybody did. Their story was the most important thing to them, so it was highly guarded. It was more valuable than an heir. So it might explain why the Spanish, who documented many wonders, left only cryptic, sort of secondhand remarks about men who flew with devils or soared across valleys like sorcerers. Remember that in these days, such a thing would not have been perceived as technology. Like flying, like aircraft or hot air balloons, those probably at this point still would have been perceived as witchcraft. Because these civilizations were before and around the same time as the medieval ages in Europe, when people were being burned at the stake and subject to all manner of horrors just for knowing the qualities of ginger or enjoying the taste of basil. So, in other words, very few of people tell a story. That story is easily lost, especially if the invaders perceive that story as an abomination to be wiped from the face of the earth forever. Anyway, to test these lines of thought, I began collecting every single scrap of evidence that I could. Some of that evidence was newspaper articles from the 70s about experimental balloon flights near Nazca. You guys remember the Nazca lines? And fringe websites were referencing these unique Andean glider attempts. And I found that really interesting because there were local myths that spoke of flying priests. And the deeper I went, the more I sensed that each piece fit a grander puzzle. It was as if a hidden tapestry was still scattered throughout the area. I mean, we're still finding their stuff all the time. Somebody's just got to go find the aircraft, I think. Or, I mean, maybe we won't ever be allowed to find it or know about its existence if it is found. Who knows? But throughout history, man is recorded as discussing flight. This is not some unique idea to the Aztecs or the Inca or the Maya. Throughout history, man has been seeing flying things in the sky and sometimes even flying themselves through some kind of divine object's power, if you believe in myths or legends, or if you're basically religious at all, or spiritual even. Surely as long as birds have existed, man has probably thought, huh, I wonder what it's like up there. So why would a simply paper and wood plane, as built by the Wright brothers, for example, who are credited as being the fathers of flight, not have existed a long, long, long time before them? Especially considering that there were materials that were equivalent to what they used to build their aircraft. You're telling me that man never flew before the end of 1903? Despite the musings of Da Vinci and, you know, the answers that might have been hidden in Tesla's secret journals and Egyptian hieroglyphs that we've seen that seem to display flying craft, or wall art of many nations that displays things coming down from the heavens or humans going up into the heavens. You know, we've got these great Sanskrit tales from India, the kite flying of ancient China several hundred years before Christ. And even the projectiles of war, I think, from like the Napoleonic era, the cannon fire and all that kind of stuff. There's no room in our minds that man once sat upon a seat and rode it through the sky. Despite knowing the aerodynamics of arrows and the quality that wind provides for the speed of ships by use of sails, and even with like the records of ancient robotics being able to flutter around the rooms in the Middle East, for some reason we've got it in our mind that we could not have possibly flown before the Wright brothers. That's just bizarre to me. You know, I realize that was a bit probably long-winded, but like, let's go, people. Is it not ironic that this same time period, by the way, aligning with the apocalypse of the United States near the same time, end of the 1800s, beginning of the 1900s, the great dismantling of the Greco-Roman god structure that existed prior to the Common Age under the gods of new technology, which is where we are now. More on that in like the past few episodes. Go back if you want to know more about that weird fringe topic that I am obsessed with. This is when all of our cities were like burned down, like the Great Chicago Fire, the Peshtigo Fire, the Seattle, all the fires all over the United States. This is that time period. That's when we also just revealed this magical new technology known as flight. Yeah, no, bro. This was a big shakeup where they invented everything at once, dropped all the new tech, and everything that came before us was burned to f***ing crisp. That's what I think, man. I think it's crazy. Sorry I cussed everybody. I get really fired up sometimes when I'm talking about this stuff. But yeah, so This is when, you know, we were founding buildings instead of building them. This is when we dug up giant bones as well and also destroyed them because the museums paid us to in order to hide the truth. But I digress. Let's go to Peru. Nothing quite tantalizes the imagination like the Nazca lines of Peru, right? These long described as giant geoglyphs or ritual pathways. Some say star maps or cosmic homages. They remain this bizarre marvel. The sheer scale of these things is almost incomprehensible. It's a canvas etched across the desert floor with massive drawings. And from the vantage point of the ground, these lines appear random. But from the air, you see hummingbirds, monkeys, giant humanoids, intricate geometric shapes. Mainstream archaeologists suggest that the Nazca performed these creations for religious reasons, not necessarily intending them to be viewed from the sky. But that seems weird to me. Why go to that scale if no one could fully grasp it from ground level? I don't know. The idea that ancient man just had so much time on their hands that they had so much of that same time to just waste trying to perfect bizarre construction abilities lost to time just simply doesn't really align with me. What if this wasn't the first time they were seen from above? If the civilization that carved them, which predated the Inca, by the way, had any form of balloon technology, even a rudimentary one, they could have orchestrated these masterpieces with much greater ease, or at least seen what they were doing, and I don't feel like it's that far-fetched of an idea. Imagine, like, they could have levels, like, here's a balloon here, and this is the lowest one. Nazca lines are, like, down here, right? Nazca lines down here, first balloon, then there's a second balloon, third balloon, and they can observe the building, the construction process, and they can yell down to their lower balloons to essentially move the line that way, or, okay, now make a right angle, whatever it is. It just makes sense, because this isn't some super advanced technology, and yet we don't want to give these people any credit for doing things that clearly require being in the air to do. It's just kind of weird. Balloons for battlefield analysis existed before flight as well, like as founded by the Wright brothers. I also recall reading about a 1970s experiment where a group of enthusiasts basically sewed a hot air balloon from materials that were from around the ancient Peruvian age when, you know, the Inca and the Maya and the Aztec were kind of around. They would have had these materials, and they were these cloths, and they sealed it with like this substance of rubber that would have been able to be found in the trees nearby, and then they fueled it with fire, just fire. And they managed a brief but undeniable flight over the desert. And it's kind of like, if they could do this now, you know, if they could recreate or possibly emulate what the ancients would have done now, then the ancients probably perfected it and would have been able to do it much easier and much more efficiently than anybody who's trying to recreate it could do now. But the point is, it has been recreated and done. And of course, something like that, like, most people would just consider that like a stunt, but for me, that wouldn't be considered just a stunt. It's sort of a glimpse at lost history becoming tangible, an idea becoming visible. Like, this is possible. And if modern experimenters could do it with minimal resources, imagine what a dedicated, like, ancient cult or priesthood or team of engineers, I mean, could achieve with decades or centuries of iterative knowledge. Because they have knowledge of the stars, they have knowledge of how to flow water through their gardens, they have knowledge of terracing their gigantic Andean structures, they have knowledge of some of the most advanced weaponry of the day. Like, they were doing pretty good for themselves, and it's kind of weird that they maybe didn't also just figure out a way to pop up in the air real quick. So yeah, for me, the demonstration was proof of concept. It can be done with pre-industrial technology, and that's pretty much all I care about. And if the idea existed at Nazca, then it might have migrated or reemerged within the Inca or even earlier societies across Mesoamerica. Ancient knowledge can come in cycles where it's sometimes lost and then sometimes reborn. Knowledge of this value would hopefully be passed along, right? They all had very similar aspects to their civilization, how they built things, how they lived, how they worshipped. They were all very similar, so they were passing on things from one to the other. Knowledge of this value would probably be one of those things. But if those who it was passed to were murdered at the hands of the colonizer, then just like so many other things, the candle of that particular time in history just simply goes out with nothing left to see. It's like, it's time to start over. Now we got to reinvent it because it was lost. The last guy who knew about it's dead. In my wildest dreams, I visited Peru, and someday, very soon, I hope to, and I'll investigate these things on my own. Because I would definitely trek into the highlands of the Andes to see the breathtaking remains of the Inca Empire firsthand. Machu Picchu perched in misty splendor. It'd probably feel like stepping into a realm beyond time. And I can't help but think that these people must have intimately known the wind, the curvature of the mountains, the lay of the valleys. Their entire existence was balanced on the edge of seemingly impossible feats, like building stone fortresses thousands of feet above sea level. And I don't see these terraced edges as merely locations for food cultivation and erosion management, but also perches for gliders to descend into the valley below quickly and efficiently. They could survey the land around them with a bird's eye view, using only the knowledge of a leaf and how it would react on the wind. And this may attribute to the reason for why these people are directly related to those that call themselves one of the cradles of civilization, the Caral and the Moche people who were here before and whose descendants exist to this day. And I've read rumors about modern hobbyists constructing gliders made from totoras as well, these reeds that they use to build boats on Lake Titicaca. And these hobbyists were like hoping to replicate a plausible Inca-era design. I looked for some articles but had some really hard time finding it. But some succeeded in short flights using the natural updrafts swirling off mountain ridges. And even a minute or two of sustained flight is enough to prove the concept that the ancients, if they so desired, could have fashioned simple gliders and easily have flown about the valleys. They had the weaving technology, the wood or the reed materials, and obviously a deep familiarity with the mountainous environment. So piloting a glider from peak to peak might sound like a wild stunt, but in the hands of these brilliant engineers, like those who built some of these insane, impeccably fitted walls, these megalithic structures at the top of these mountains, it's not inconceivable to me. Even now, adrenaline chasers wear these wingsuits, as they're called, which is just essentially a bedsheet wrapped around your body in such a way that it enables flight when you jump off mountains. So no high technology here. It's just a minute understanding of how to harness air to hold up a human body. So I imagine a scenario where a specialized group of Inca elite, or the architect priests, if you will, soared above the valleys for ceremonial or strategic purposes. Realistically, it probably would have been rare, you know, to see these guys flying around. I'm not saying it was used all the time, although maybe if it was used all the time, it could explain how they got all those rocks up there. But it might have just been scouts, you know, or dispatchers who have to send a quick message or scout the area below. Still, though, the possibility alone is enough to captivate me. And I hope you guys see why this is kind of something that I feel like we should know about, because it would really explain a lot. Some people speak of flying men, stories, grandparents heard from their grandparents. But who can say if they're more than legends, right? That's the sticking point with so much of this, though. The line between folklore and lost knowledge is often so paper thin, and yet the accepted modern narrative would say there's just not a chance of deviation from the history book. But it's easy to fixate on the Maya and Inca when discussing advanced pre-Columbian societies. But my research kept leading me to the Aztecs. It has been for weeks at this point. Everything that I'm seeing about North America and some really crazy stuff, for some reason, it all is leading back to the Aztecs right now. So this is like one of my first big videos, finally pulling together some of the stuff that I've been researching about the Aztecs and how there's a lot more to them than I think we're being told. Their capital, Tenochtitlan, was an engineering marvel. It was a city rising from the center of Lake Texcoco, interlaced with causeways and canals. The Spanish invaders gasped at its sophistication, remarking how it rivaled or surpassed anything in Europe at the time. The Aztecs achieved complex agriculture with chinampas, which were floating gardens, and possessed advanced knowledge of astronomy, architecture, and even medicine. So, in short, these were not unsophisticated stone-chipping barbarians like they would have us believe. They were innovators. They were risk-takers. They were deeply connected to their environment. And one question that arises is how such a vibrant, expansive empire could flourish without large-scale wheeled transport, right? Right back to, so these people didn't have the wheel? What the heck? It's especially weird considering that these cultures migrated frequently. I did stumble on repeated references to grand ceremonies in which Aztec priests performed feats that left onlookers awestruck, such as scaling enormous poles or rising in ways that were deemed supernatural. Were these purely metaphors? Quite possibly. But the more I studied, the more I saw people enthralled by the sky, venerating the feathered serpent, Quetzalcoatl. There is an article out there that mentions an archaeologist finding a glider attributed to the ancient Aztecs. And there's only, the idea started and died right there, it seems, because I couldn't find anything else. Is this a sign of censorship, or, you know, is this some kind of gateway idea that would lead to a different future than we have? Is that why we can't know about it? I mean, just imagine an Aztec balloon with this finely woven cotton, the finest cotton, and it's sealed with this latex-like rubber that's taken from the local rubber trees. And it's lined on the inside, it's airtight, and heat from a bowl below or whatever it is, you know, a burning coals, a heat source, lifts it off the ground like a hot air balloon. And the occupant is ascending above the lake, and he gets to survey the grand city, which is very intentionally laid out, from a vantage point that is unthinkable to the common folk. It's a mesmerizing vision, one that would be etched into the memory of the people forever, fueling legends of priests who communed with the heavens. I believe that if this ever happened, it may have been a tightly held secret among the ruling class. After all, in an empire that prized cosmic power and divine authority, they were eating each other's hearts and stuff at the highest levels, floating above your subjects could seal your status as divinely sanctioned, as a god, and that's what these chiefs wanted to be. Every time I stumbled upon some kind of reference to flying sorcerers in Spanish accounts, chroniclers were describing how certain high priests seemed to vanish from mountaintops, or how the devil carried them aloft. And I wonder, are we glimpsing the tail end of an actual flight tradition here, filtered through the superstitions of these conquistadors who were clearly overwhelmed by what they saw? Back in Europe, as we already said, this would all be dismissed as black magic. The Spanish were primed to see the devil in the indigenous beliefs. So if they witnessed something resembling flight, they would probably interpret it as witchcraft. Conversely, if it was only rumor, they might record it with the same casual disbelief. Not only this, but they didn't exactly spend time with the natives to learn about them. As a matter of fact, they often deceived the natives, and that's how they were able to slaughter them so easily, is because they would deceive them into believing that they were there to be their friends, and then they would massacre them as soon as they entered the tent to feast upon the dinner that is literally thrown in their honor by these indigenous people. This was often the case, and this was the case with the warlord and rightful king of the Inca, Atahualpa, who was captured, tortured, stolen from, and then ultimately murdered, all enabled by deception of these Spaniards. So they weren't trying to learn about the people at all. Therefore, they wouldn't have known about their tech at all. In some codex fragments, I found references that, you know, were vague, I admit, to the Watchers of the Wind, and I still find that interesting. These were individuals who were rumored to ascend in order to watch over the communal fields or track incoming storms. These references don't say how they ascended, only that they did so. When a culture is decimated and its records are burned or lost, we're left with these sort of intangible scraps, and they're kind of like smoke signals that you just kind of see on the distant mountain peak, and you can tell that there's like something there, but you might never see it plainly again. The Spanish may have never even seen the flying device in action, and not knowing what they looked like when they were on the ground, they were no doubt burned and destroyed like everything else that these ancient people had built. They could have the aircraft just sitting in the middle of the field. You know, there maybe a whole fleet of gliders, who knows? Maybe a hot air balloon, maybe four, who knows? And these Spaniards just thinking it's just more Aztec cloth stuff, just burn it up. They don't even know that it's high technology. One motif that sort of threads its way through Mesoamerican belief systems is the feathered serpent known as Quetzalcoatl. I mentioned him before. That's his name to the Aztecs. The Maya called him Kukulcan. And this deity embodies a blend of sky and earth, bringing the realms of flight, which are symbolized by feathers, and the terrestrial serpent form. It's my belief that this serpent god may be either Satan himself, like literally is Satan, not a made-up figure, Quetzalcoatl, but actually Satan, or maybe one of these other fallen angels. And this is where the science-y fans are going to tune out, but I'm just so beyond science, and I am curious. So if these people truly are as important as they seem, being considered a cradle of civilization, and in my opinion, the ancestors of much of the North American tribes, especially the great Anasazi people, then they would have been of paramount importance to the Watchers. So I asked myself, who is this Quetzalcoatl really? Quetzalcoatl is the feathered serpent, revered among the Aztecs and other Mesoamerican cultures as a wise teacher. He's a bringer of civilization. And the same Quetzalcoatl who's credited with guiding humanity, teaching them agriculture and astronomy, and even shaping the moral compass of entire societies. But if we shift our vantage, glancing over at the Book of Enoch or extra biblical accounts of the Watchers, and if we rope in the biblical figure of the serpent in Eden, then things start looking a little bit similar. So let's start with the basics. Biblical tradition says that there are angels who fell from grace. Some call them the Watchers. Others cast them as devils, demons, or by more specific names. Lucifer, Azazel, Sambiaza, you name it. And we all remember the serpent figure in the Garden of Eden, long associated with Satan, who tempts humanity to partake of this forbidden knowledge. Well, in Mesoamerican myth, Quetzalcoatl does something strikingly similar. He offers knowledge. He's the teacher, the benevolent guide. He's a bestower of cosmic wisdom. And yeah, he is also a freaking serpent with feathers that lift him heavenward. Isn't that reminiscent of a radiant being, once glorious, yet also a serpent figure that slyly merges heaven and earth? Exactly. My point is that these people were very close to one of the strongest Elohim to ever exist. They may have been awarded certain abilities for their nonstop human sacrifice, the child murder, the cannibalism, the blood rituals. These people were very violent in peace and in times of war. Many watchers in the Book of Enoch taught humanity the forbidden arts, right? Things like weapon making, sorcery, astrology. You know, Azazel, for instance, is singled out for some pretty dark instruction, whereas Quetzalcoatl is usually seen as a more benevolent, culture-giving presence. Attitudes of the gods change, though, just as attitudes of the people do. So my point is, we don't really know who this guy is, but he's definitely one of the watchers. And that leaves many people, myself included, raising an eyebrow towards Satan, historically known as this light bearer, the proud cherub who fell. We've got the serpent angle, the notion of bringing illumination to humanity and the thirst for worship. Let's recall that Quetzalcoatl was indeed worshipped intensely, with grand temples and pyramids bearing his name and forms. So could this just be a mass iteration of the same rebellious figure who claims dominion wherever he lands and comes represented as a snake wherever he goes? In the Eden narrative, that cunning serpent claims that humans will be like gods, knowing good and evil. Both serpents, one in Eden, one in Mesoamerica, entice humankind with progress and enlightenment, though from a biblical vantage, it's laced with rebellion against God, the Most High, right? So, but here's where it gets even more curious. After the conquest by the conquistadors, many chroniclers equated feathered serpents or sky serpents with demonic illusions. Missionaries in the New World, after all, came armed with one big assumption, and that is serpent equals devil. Given the similarities, it's not surprising that Quetzalcoatl was branded a diabolical trick by some of these early Christian writers. Even the notion of him as a white-robed teacher who departed on a boat made of snakes and promised to return, it has an almost apocalyptic second coming type vibe, which is very reminiscent of how certain fallen ones might mimic or distort biblical prophecies. False prophets. All of this, my friends, makes the prime suspect, if you're bridging Mesoamerican myth and biblical theology, he's none other than Satan himself. And Quetzalcoatl, likewise, bestowed art and science and moral order, an alternative version of enlightenment that eventually demanded a cult of devotion. So to be clear, mainstream academics don't buy any of this, and I'm really going off on a tangent. This topic is extremely interesting to me, so sometimes I just go. But, you know, most people say that Quetzalcoatl is purely a Mesoamerican religious figure shaped by local myth and legend. There's nothing really there. But here at 21 CD, we aren't really beholden to the sanctioned narrative. So we look at the patterns, the repeated history, you know, the stuff that is seen across continents and millennia at the same time, and we wonder, could it be that Quetzalcoatl is just another mask, just another shiza? As I was saying, could it be that Quetzalcoatl is just another image of that same rebellious angel, that has been deceiving us for the entirety of our time here on Earth? And if that's clear, if that's possible, if that's true, then of course, if the Aztecs and these South American people were the closest to him, he might mess around with them a little bit. He might give them some stuff that other people in the world don't have. And by the way, there are many, many stories of the Aztecs also battling with Nephilim during these times. So, like, we have no idea, bro. We don't know what's going on, but the Aztecs have they have a very rich story that is eerily similar to the Bible. It's really, really freaking crazy. And if they're talking about the Nephilim and Quetzalcoatl appears to be Satan, I mean, what more do you need? Maybe Satan just gave him an airplane, dang it. There's all sorts of weird stuff that was happening right in those times. What if history isn't telling the whole story? And what if these people are actually a little bit more advanced than we're being led to believe? It's very similar to the fleet of Chinese ships under Zheng He in 1421, who allegedly discovered America. But these ships were destroyed in some kind of freak fire accident. Rumors say that it was around 1,000 ships, and there was maybe even some kind of gigantic, like, 70-foot wave, and it was basically an apocalypse that nobody has recorded as an apocalypse, but there are signs all over the world, and I'm going to be doing an episode on it. But anyway, this freak accident convinced the Chinese government to order their entire navy to be scuttled due to the fact that the gods must not want them to expand their borders in that way or travel upon the water. And if the Chinese emperor at that time hadn't done that, then the Chinese would have achieved naval superiority over the entire planet. Nobody was even close, and they had already made it to America before Christopher Columbus. If that was allowed to continue, the world as we know it would not be the way that it is. The prophecies would not be able to be fulfilled. So there was an apocalypse. And around that same time, the Aztecs were also wiped out. Just saying, the Aztecs and the Inca. There's a lot of weird stuff. It's divine intervention. Humans across cultures have always had a deep yearning for flight. It's as universal as the sky. Why assume that no one in thousands of years in Mesoamerican brilliance tried to harness it? After all, the Wright brothers didn't use anything, hello, that the Aztecs or the Maya or the Inca didn't have or couldn't replicate. I'm telling you, folks, they're not telling the truth. But anyway, as I continued my detective work, one detail did continually pop up, and that's the near absence of the freaking wheel. The Mesoamerican societies had the intelligence and the resources to create advanced cityscapes. In Mexico, they found rivers of mercury under some of these pyramids. They had ball games. So they had spheres that they used for entertainment purposes and rituals as well. They had the most advanced weaponry on the continent. The Aztec calendar clock thing is a circle. It's a giant wheel. So they knew about it. They just didn't need it. So why didn't they need it? Because they had all of these gigantic buildings and these massive city centers that had to be built somehow. Stuff had to be transported somehow. Does it really just come down to manpower? Did they just have enough to carry stuff around on their backs and they didn't need carts or aerial support? I have no idea. It doesn't make any sense. Consider the Inca, for instance. They built these roads that spanned vast distances at high altitudes, but the terrain was brutal. Llamas could essentially carry limited loads, so large-scale wheeled transport was pretty much pointless. Meanwhile, though, if a specialized group of scouts could literally soar from a high plateau to a valley below using gliders, it would be of tactical advantage. Faster than any road. This is theoretical, of course, but not unimaginable, particularly after seeing glimpses of modern glider experiments in the Andes, as we've already discussed, and just watching people hang glide in general. But if we pivot back to the Aztecs, they built Tenochtitlan in marshy terrain. Carts and wagons would have been stymied by these waterlogged grounds. We've already talked about that, the swamps. Instead, they used canoes for bulk transport, allegedly. But for some vantage points, especially if you're planning expansions or exacting cosmic alignments, which they did, a short balloon ascent could accomplish in minutes, what might otherwise require hours of climbing. Again, this isn't conclusive, but each little puzzle piece makes the scenario more plausible. Time after time, I've run into these half-heard stories from local communities. A farmer, for instance, in the High Sierras would tell me about his grandmother's tale of El Brujo Volador, the flying sorcerer, right, who once soared off a cliff to chase away a storm. A guide on the Yucatan Peninsula recalled hearing from his village elder that ancient priests used to stand among the clouds. It's scraps, always scraps, hardly the sort of evidence that would satisfy an archaeological peer review, and I think that that is the point. I think that they have hidden flight from us, guys. Look at all of the examples of human flight in all of these myths and legends. I mean, we haven't even had flight now for that long, and we're already going to space. You're telling me they never invented any of that stuff back then? You're saying all of those strange structures that nobody can explain how they built, it must have been supernatural. Sure, maybe it was supernatural, but also maybe it was forbidden technology, and the technology was forbidden because it's too soon. They weren't supposed to have it. And that's why there's so many mini apocalypses all the time. It's because the tech keeps pouring out of these watchers, and God's like, yo, like, I can't, this is not the way it's supposed to go. So yeah, as I'm digging through all these secondhand accounts, and you know, I'm journaling my thoughts on all this kind of stuff, writing it down and trying to make it make sense, you know, it occurs to me that in a single generation, if the guardians of a particular technology or you know, what they know, if that person just dies, that whole practice will just vanish. If no one writes it down or preserves it in durable material that gets out of the burning city, then the practice will just simply vanish. The knowledge will disappear. Future cultures might only see even faint, like, echoes of what their ancestors had achieved because of that. And unfortunately, in South America, there was a lot of genocide. So a lot of that stuff just happened. A lot of massacres, a lot of culture, a lot of history, a lot of knowledge just gone. It doesn't exist anymore. It's like the, you know, the burning of the Library of Alexandria. Now, I don't know if that actually went down the way history says it went down, but it's, you know, the sentiment is the same. Consider how many ancient achievements, you know, that we still struggle to explain. Like, it's staggering. We have no idea. And it feels like almost every day these days that we discover another, like, complex or city in the jungle that totally rewrites human history. I swear I see those articles every day. It's you know, obviously I'm exaggerating, but very frequently I see history being rewritten, apparently. It just really goes to show you that the scientific community has no idea what's going on. So, why can't I believe that maybe Aztecs could fly? You can't explain, you don't have any better explanation for how they built these things. You know, the precise stone cutting of the structures in Cusco, or the megalithic architecture across the whole world. Our conventional timeline says that flight is a recent invention. But what if that's a reflection of our bias, not a reflection of actual human ingenuity? We can't explain any of these megalithic structures, especially the ones in impossible locations like Machu Picchu, where, like, the quarries and stuff like that, where the materials were sourced, are so far away that we have no idea how they even did it, especially considering they weren't using the wheel. So if they weren't using the wheel, and we don't know how they did it, is it possible that maybe it was through flight? A ton of giant balloons or something like that? It doesn't have to be aircraft, like airplanes, like jet propulsion or anything, although I'm not saying that isn't possible as well, but I am saying, like, at least balloons is logical. You might expect that if these theories held any water at all, mainstream news outlets would be all over them, but that's just not the case. Ancient flight is a fringe subject. We're not allowed to believe in it, and it's overshadowed, of course, by all these UFO conspiracies or whatever. The obsession with extraterrestrials is insane, especially when it comes to building these ancient structures. And personally, I lean more toward the human-based theory, which is that these cultures themselves developed flight or had flying help, but not from the aliens. And over the years, I've clipped all sorts of small news pieces and whatnot, and I have found reed glider tests that were done in the Peruvian highlands. And it was at a local festival in Bolivia, and it featured this condor-shaped balloon made of cloth. Each anecdote on its own is trivial. Like, we have all of these small things that point towards flight. But since they're not connected, and since there's nothing that literally says, hey guys, we could freaking fly, we just don't believe that they could. But if you gather enough of these little tiny stories, then you start to see that there is an undercurrent of evidence. There's a series of pockets around the Americas, and indeed the whole world, where people hint at the same fundamental concept, and that is that our ancestors could fly in some capacity. And the public rarely hears about these kinds of ideas because it's easy to just dismiss them as BS. Plus, nobody really actually cares. Like, I hate to break it to you, we are a rarity because nobody really cares about this stuff anymore. Because we can fly now. So who cares when it started? Most people don't even know who the Wright brothers are anymore because the new youth are just so R-word. But I care. I care because if I know when flight was when it started, then I can pin the tail on the donkey. It's one more way that I can strengthen my resolve about this whole narrative being a lie. Netzahualcoyotl, who was alive from 1402 to 1472, is a celebrated poet king of Texcoco. He's exemplified as a genius far beyond the realm of conventional rule. There's something weird about this guy. And mainstream scholarship rightly honors his dazzling poetry and groundbreaking infrastructure projects, but there's another side to his story that deserves equal recognition, and that's that he did experiments with flight. For generations, local families around Lake Texcoco have whispered of his ability to fly with remarkable consistency. And by all historical measures, he was no ordinary monarch. He guided Texcoco into an era of cultural and intellectual brilliance, commissioning codices, and he championed some philosophical inquiries, and he personally designed sophisticated hydraulic systems. This same fearless and inventive spirit, which is so rare to find in history, it seems, also drove him to explore new frontiers, such as the skies. This guy was born in 1402. This is sometime in the 1400s. That's crazy. This guy's out here in the jungles inventing hydraulic systems in the 1400s. This is who they want to tell us is some kind of savage who is like eating dirt. Why do they even say that stuff? Like, into the modern era, they're all, like, trying to be so politically correct, but they still have this weird narrative that totally writes off every other civilization that ever came before theirs. It's just insane how, like, it's in the history. Like, history is so racist in the way that it just doesn't tell the real story. And it's a dang shame. Getting back to Netzahualcoyotl, local narratives describe people literally gathering in secluded lakefront clearings and watching the king and his trusted engineers basically inflate giant cloth envelopes with hot air. And then it would allow the poet king to basically lift off from the ground. It's a hot air balloon. And at first glance, yeah, it seems like legend, but Mesoamerican societies had precisely these materials, guys, needed for these kind of contraptions to be invented. They could make pretty much anything out of cotton, and they possessed natural latex from these rubber trees in their environment, and those could be used to create airtight seals. They knew how to harness and control fire. So, given Netzahualcoyotl's proven engineering prowess, building, you know, such things as dikes and extensive waterworks and hydraulics, the leap from all of this to a hot air balloon or a glider, just to me, becomes 100% entirely plausible. Among Texcoco's most enduring oral traditions is the account of a tethered ascent at daybreak, and in this story, a specially woven envelope was treated with resin to trap heated air. The rumors have it that these craft would be suspended by ropes for safety, of course, so they could pull them back in. And it reportedly lifted the poet king high enough to survey the land from an unprecedented vantage. Now, mainstream records rarely confirm this type of thing. You know, the frequency with which these tales appear in local narratives, though, makes it difficult to dismiss, for me at least. And those who claim to have ancestral memories of it speak of a sort of reverence around the experiment. It's godlike to the people, and so the story is told in godlike fashion. Critics often argue that pre-Columbian societies in the Valley of Mexico lacked crucial technologies like the wheel or large draft animals, suggesting that they were behind more mechanized old world civilizations. But in many ways, Mesoamericans simply chose alternative paths to innovation. For flight, they had access to textile mastery, rubber-like sealants, and experienced artisans that was well within their capabilities. So you combine these with the Aztec tradition of building ceremonial spaces where priests and rulers interacted with cosmic forces, and, you know, a small-scale balloon or glider becomes not just a possibility, but almost more like likely. Most scientists prefer safer ground, though. They don't want to risk their credibility or something by, you know, I guess sort of championing a hypothesis about ancient flight without literal bulletproof evidence. And that's pretty hard to get in the archaeological world. And so the true narrative simply remains hidden. You know, and we just talk about it on the internet and groups like this, and the oral traditions continue. They tell those stories to their children, and their children tell it to their children, and it just keeps going, and we don't realize that it's embellished, but at the core, a true story. When you integrate everything, all of these puzzle pieces, the engineering feats, the myths, the odd glimpses of modern replication, it doesn't prove ancient flight, and I realize that, but I'm not here to prove anything. I'm just here to say it does make a compelling argument that we should consider it more seriously. Reflect for a moment on the illusions that we harbor about linear progression, that wheels, steel, and engines, they sort of define our technological advancement. But the Inca shaped entire mountaintops into terraces, and the Aztecs built floating gardens that defied all logic to the invading Spaniards. Time is crazy, and how it changes things leaves more questions than answers. Anyway, guys, I had a lot of fun with you. Don't drink the water. Question everything.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.